We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 361. It's Monday morning after the Dodgers series in the middle of this seemingly never-ending West Coast trip. What's up, Scott?
What's up, man? We only have, Seattle now, and just a number of more 10 o'clock games. We got a reprieve over the weekend, I feel like. That was Sunday Night Baseball was actually a good thing this week.
Yeah, Sunday Night Baseball, 7 o'clock instead of 8, although I don't know if you saw this on the schedule. I noticed this randomly. They're moving back to 8 after Labor Day for some reason. I guess when school's back in session, they can start it back at 8 p.m., but when no one's in school and it's summer vacations for everyone, they're going to start it an hour earlier. I just don't get it.
I don't know. It probably has to do with the primetime TV schedule and all that other crap. I don't know. Maybe it's an A-Rod's contract. He's like, I got to be in primetime, and that starts at 8 o'clock.
Yeah. A-Rod, they don't want too many kids listening to A-Rod, so they got to put it later in the night.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like he says anything bad. He just says dumb things.
We got A-Rod all weekend because he popped into the Yes booth on Friday night.
Yeah. He was, for the first time, someone was asking me if I was listening on Sunday with the sound off, because I have done that in the past. And I don't like doing that because it feels weird. Okay, but I sometimes just do it because it's, you know, I really get bothered. It's annoying to me. But I think I'm numb at this point. I think I'm numb. I didn't even tweet about it this time.
He's finally beating you down.
I can't handle it. There's just too many things for me to say. I would be just typing throughout the entire game.
We've had a lot of A-Rod and a lot of Sunday Night Baseball games over the last month because they played the Yankees and Red Sox played twice in a matter of 7 days on Sunday Night Baseball. And then we had this.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, look, they come out with some victories, though, and it's a lot more tolerable for me. So that's the big thing. I mean, we saw pitching, baby. We saw pitching all weekend.
They beat the Dodgers at their own game.
Yeah.
They pitched well the entire series. And it's not just the Dodgers series that we're going to talk about, because you and I recorded before the last game in Oakland, which did not go well. And Tanaka did not pitch well. But after that, it seemed like Paxton stepped up. He realized the importance of that game. He realized the importance of not continuing that losing streak, which was at 4 games, which was, I believe, their longest losing streak all season, correct?
To say that he realized that it's a big game and realized that he has to stop sucking would infer that he's had control of it beforehand and was able to, like, oh, I'm going to stop sucking now, but maybe not. I'm just going to wait a little bit longer. And then, you know, the Dodgers series, a lot of headlines. I'll start then.
Like, realize not the right word, but but finally had some self-respect for himself. Finally was tired of losing, although he has been pitching well his last couple times out.
He's been pitching very well. I mean, we've seen some rough first innings occasionally still, but, you know, it's almost like every other start now has been okay in the beginning of the game.
The Red Sox game at Yankee Stadium. So he got hit by the Red Sox in Fenway and then pitched against the Red Sox at Yankee Stadium, gave up that 2-run home run to JD Martinez in the first inning, and we're all losing our shit again. And then he's been good since.
I mean, he was phenomenal. I know we're going to talk more about this, but watching that, I had a fantasy football draft that night live in person.
Did you take Andrew Luck?
I did, actually. But I also took him in like the 9th round, so it didn't hurt that bad.
You see OJ Simpson upset that he took Andrew Luck?
Yeah, I don't really want
to feel wrong that OJ Simpson is like out there on social media.
Yeah,
like
I don't want to
like
see
a
that.
Normal person.
And there's other guys in the room like drafting a team with him. Like, I'm not doing that. I'm sorry, but I don't really want him to be on there because I don't want to see it. I just don't. And some people were joking about the fact that that video went up and, like, that's why Andrew Luck heard that OJ drafted him and was like, I'm done. Like, this is not going to be on my shoulders. I'm out. Which would make a lot.
Can't win that man a championship.
Yeah, no, I cannot win that man a championship. I can't feel good about that. I don't know what he's going to do with that money. But so, yeah, I watched most of the, I had the game kind of on in the background, but really wasn't paying as much attention, but watched all the video and stuff afterwards. And, man, he was impressive. He was a lot of fun to watch pitch that night.
Yes. And, going to break it all down. Couple things to just mention quickly. Details for the August 31st event right around the corner. T-shirts. I know people have been tweeting out the T-shirts. We are savages in the Bronx. They look awesome. So keep an eye out for your T-shirt. Scott's holding it up to the camera right now, which we will maybe post that clip, maybe not post that clip. Let's see. The exciting thing, though, for this event, unlike the last few for the season, we're going to be at Billy's. And there's going to be Blue Point Brewery's going to kick in two 16-ounce cans. Scott, you're holding up your arm like I said something incorrect.
Nope, I'm just going to give all the details on that because I think I have some different that I haven't even told you yet. Blue Point is sponsoring our friends at Blue Point. We have we've been working with them, and they're going to be sponsoring the pregame now. We're going to be at Billy's. We're really excited about this. First of all, just the fact that they're jumping on board with the event. I think it's going to be an exciting thing for all of us. But yeah, to everybody who has already purchased their tickets, like, you're just getting extra now, which is awesome. That's always fun when you buy something and then more things happen with zero extra dollars. So we're getting, you'll get two drink tickets for, they'll be good for two 16-ounce cans at Billy's. That's the pregame. So breakfast beers, guys, like, this is a 1 o'clock game. This is the game that it's important for you to get to the pregame at 11 o'clock because that is, we'll probably be there until like 12:30 or so and then head over to the stadium so we can get into our seats for first pitch. But yeah, to the Savages in the Bronx t-shirts are, a lot of them have already been delivered. They went out pretty early this year, event, which I'm very excited about. No stress on my end, which is cool for pretty much the first time off season as far as the t-shirts go. But that's good. And then what was it? Oh yeah. So we're going to be upstairs. This is a little different too. We're going to be upstairs in the Billy's VIP area. Once you go into the bar, go up the only stairs that are there, and we'll be outside on like that party deck. And there's two
stairways,
two flights of stairs. It's like go all the way up to the second deck
in the main warehouse looking area.
Yeah. And we'll be up there in by that outdoor bar, probably over to the left-hand side. So look for us. We'll probably have a check-in station so we can get you guys checked in, give you your drink tickets. And then people who purchased their ticket after our t-shirt cutoff, get there at 11 again, because what we do is we print out extra inventory for anybody who signs up after that date. And then we'll give it to you at the game if we have it. Otherwise, we'll have to get it to you in the next run when we ship the next batch of shirts. So I'm pumped up for this. We have a lot of people coming and going to be the final one. And one other detail about BP Crew stuff, playoff tickets. Like, you got to start thinking about it right now, because I had a conversation with our people over at the Yankees late last week, and we are talking playoff tickets. And again, like I told you guys before, we're doing some playoff games. I don't know exactly which games we're going to be doing, but we're doing them, probably one per round. This is what's in my brain right now. But everybody who's come to an event, you guys have the priority for these tickets. And I'm probably going to be announcing this later today or tomorrow, like when the games are that we're going to be doing and what the deal is. And we'll put out like a list for everybody to sign up on so that you can get to it. And we can email when the tickets are available. But yeah, we're shooting for a good chunk of them out in section 205. First of all, this is the best way to go. If you've gone to an event, I would look to get tickets through us. One, it's going to be fun. And two, we're going to be able to get to lock in the pricing basically now. And the way that the playoff tickets work, it's a sliding scale. So as the tickets sell out, they get more expensive as the days go on. So you're probably not going to get a better deal you will not get a better deal for tickets if you buy them later, especially if they hit the third party market. They're going to be outrageous. But yeah, so keep an eye out for that. And I'll put out a link for a new email list for that guy. But today is Monday, tomorrow, Tuesday, final day to buy tickets for the 31st event. So if you're interested in these playoff tickets, you got to be on this BP Crew list if you're not already on it, because that's who we're sending them to.
And more information about tickets, giving away tickets, Legends Suite, four Legends Suite. We're partnering with Indochino to give away four Legends Suite tickets for Monday's game, Labor Day, against the Rangers. It's four tickets to Legends Suites. Many people say Legends Suite is the best place to sit at Yankee Stadium, better than the suite level. You get the whole buffet. Everyone loves that buffet, crab leg, sushi, the whole nine yards. So check out our Instagram page and our Twitter page for details on how to enter that contest. Again, four Legends Suite tickets to Monday's game, It's an afternoon game, Labor Day, 1 p.m. against the Texas Rangers. You'll see on social channels how to enter those contests.
And we'd much prefer someone who doesn't know how to act go into those those
yeah, the riffraff that Lon Tross doesn't want to see in there, right?
Yeah. I mean, the majority of the people that listen to this, I think, are part of the riffraff. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. We'll put in some good people.
He doesn't want the plumber sitting next to the banker?
No, not that plumber.
All right, let's just go through these games, you know, from Thursday through the weekend. And I think the weekend, there's a lot to talk about, especially in that Saturday game. But as it stands now, the Yankees and the Astros have the exact same record. The Yankees are a game in back of the Dodgers. I can't not laugh at Scott attempted to change his shirt, put his shirt on over another shirt that he has so he can wear the We Are Savages in the Bronx shirt.
I did successfully do it. You could have been smooth through that, you know.
I was looking at my notes and then I looked back to the camera and there you are, just like half in the shirt, half out of the shirt. I'll have to just screenshot that or something. But the Yankees are a game in back of the Dodgers for best record. They do now have the tiebreaker, which I think it could be important come playoff time, come October World Series time, so we'll see. But it did not look good going into that series because Tanaka, like we said, it was a important start for him to not make sure the Yankees didn't get swept in Oakland. And he's another pitcher who struggled on the road. You look at his home road splits, I feel like we mentioned this for every single Yankee starter. Tanaka has a 3.26 ERA in 85 and two-thirds innings pitched at home. He's allowed 11 home runs and 16 walks. And then on the road, 64 and a third inning, 6.58 ERA, 13 home runs, 20 walks. So more homers, more walks in 20 fewer innings pitched on the road. I don't understand what it is. Herman, same thing. Paxton has bad home road splits. We know Sabathia has bad home road splits. What is it about every single one of these Yankees pitchers that struggles on the road?
Yeah, I mean, the numbers are there for sure. Until you go to Dodger Stadium and then you pitch out of your minds, and every one of these guys pitches well. I mean, you don't get the length from Sabathia that because nobody
you don't
expects
expect
it. That's
the length,
not
though.
What we're
that's
looking
not...
for him. Yeah, yeah. But he's another one of those bucket four inning guys. But you know, I don't know. Let's just figure it out now, and that's what I like to see. And that's what's happening. So there's no answer for that. There's no answer for that question. It's a loaded question because it's easy to say that you go on the road, you're not as comfortable, you're not as familiar. And that's why. And maybe it is as simple as that. Who knows? Maybe it is as simple as just being on the road and not being at 100% feeling good at home. Gotta believe that there's another level of confidence when you're at home, unless you're Sonny Gray and you're a guy that like cannot handle being in New York at all. And then you go on the road and you're really good. You know, guys like that just don't need to be in New York. So I'm glad that these guys pitch well at home. That's a good thing. And, you know, this weekend, again, we saw James Paxton, guy who struggled on the road, dominant performance. Sabathia pitched well. And then Herman comes out, first pitch, boom, and then very good from there.
No, I mean, there are starts there that you can have positive takeaways from the road, but the large sample size
against the best team in baseball
are much more comfortable at home on the mound. And I think then you start to look to the to getting home field advantage in the playoffs and how important it is to have an extra game each series at home. It could be the difference between winning a series and losing a series for the Yankees.
Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. I mean, it's not just the, it's not just the pitching. I mean, the offense clicks at home. We've talked about this. We've all seen it with our own eyes when we played Houston and it's just important to be having that extra game at home. It's just that much more important. And I think they realize that. They really do realize that. And the fact that they're trying to take advantage of it. I mean, you hear things about, again, man, Judge being outspoken in a lot of these things. Judge being outspoken about the fact that they got their butt kicked in Oakland, had a bad taste in their mouth, and knew that they had to bounce back on Friday night. They knew that. Backs against the wall. You know, that's the mentality. That's the thing that they were thinking about. The fact that Aaron Judge is being that vocal leader as well and talking about it, I like it. But they know that they are, you know, that this home field advantage is an important deal.
Boone said, "We got punched in the mouth right here in Oakland." That was his quote after the game, after the sweep in Oakland. And it was really the pitching for Oakland that shut the Yankees down. They allowed 5 runs in 17 and a third innings for their starting pitchers, which is not supposed to be the strength of that team. They have a good bullpen and they hit home runs. sort of a classic 2019 baseball team are the Oakland A's, but they pitched to a 2.60 ERA, their starting rotation did, against the Yankees in that series. And Oakland's one of the hottest teams in baseball in the second half. They seem to do that every friggin' year. And I don't know, you might just write them off because it's another Billy Beane team, and Billy Beane teams never succeed in October, but they're playing very well right now, and they're going to face them again this weekend at Yankee Stadium. So you got to pay back. You got to return the favor to what they just did to you at home.
No, absolutely. That's why I'm really happy that we have this series for our next event on Saturday. It's going to be a big game. You know, it's going to be obviously one game into the series, but the fact that they did what they did in Oakland, the Yankees do have to say, okay, you know what? Like, no, this isn't going to happen. First of all, you're not going to get that many home games against us because you are going to be playing in the Bronx. And let us show you what it's like to play here. Because you may have beaten us while we were there, but that's not really what's going to happen in the playoffs.
If they see him, because they would be a wild card team. But Oakland could win a wild card game just as much as anyone else.
Sure.
I think.
Yeah.
Be honest, what are you thinking?
I'm just so happy we don't have to. I'm really happy that we don't have to talk about that game.
The wild card game?
Yes.
Yeah. So I do like the wild card game from a...
I don't like it being in it.
No. From a baseball fan perspective, I think it's a fun thing. And I've been to the last two of them, 2017, 2018. They're a hell of a lot of fun to be at.
Oh, yeah. It's a game seven.
But it's... yeah, you're right. It's just fun to not have to worry about that.
After a long season of working your ass off, both them and us, and all of us watching, you have to endure the season, right? And the fact that it's one game... It's kind of a kick in the balls.
Yeah, if you lose.
If you win, you're setting yourself up for hardship.
Be honest, though. Going into that Dodger series, facing off first game against Ryu, then you got Sabathia pitching in game two, and then you're facing Kershaw in game three after getting swept in Oakland. You can't be feeling very positive.
I mean, you're definitely not feeling positive after what happened in Oakland, but... This team has just showed so many times that they can turn the corner and have that, you know, that fighter's chance, the mentality of a closer. Just forget about everything. Like, nothing matters what happened behind you. You got to look in front and just go after it. And when there's big games and a lot of attention to, this team does seem to shine. Like, they like that. We talked about a lot of Cali guys on this team. Like, they were practically at home. That was practically a homecoming. Like,
it wasn't quite Angels level, but it was a lot of Yankees fans.
No. I mean, for the players, the majority of our players are from California.
Right.
Like, a ton of them.
Not majority, but.
Yeah, no. Go around the diamond. There's a lot of guys.
Sabathia, Judge, Stanton, who wasn't playing. Boone's still a Cali guy.
Yep. T. Wade, LeMahieu.
T. Wade.
Yeah, he was there, wasn't he?
Wait, LeMahieu, I thought he's from California?
Yeah.
Why did I think he was Colorado? I know
he played in Colorado and you don't like him.
Why did I think he's from Colorado?
Because he has freckles and you dismissed him.
Anyway. This typical Yankee, typical 2019 Yankees, though, they do the opposite of what you think they're going to do, where they score seven runs off of Ryu, who's been the best pitcher in the National League. He allowed seven earned runs in his entire season so far at Dodger Stadium. He allowed seven earned runs to the Yankees on Friday night.
I mean, it's fitting, is it not? Isn't it like the... Now you have some competition. Now you're not beating up on the NL East, or the NL West, the terrible NL West, and who we've actually lost to quite a bit. The Diamondbacks were thorn in our side. But yeah, you get some offense on this side. A little bit of American League offense coming in, you know, that's shaping themselves out. We have some even, it's not even our A lineup either. I don't even know what the hell that is anymore, but a lot of big bats in there for Ryu to figure out.
Yeah, and at first they scored a couple on solo home runs. Judge pulled another home run. So I know he hit an opposite field home run on Sunday night, but there was a point where he hit two consecutive home runs to left field.
Ooh.
So a little sabermetric stat for you. Over that span, 100% of his home runs were pulled.
I mean, he's doing exactly what I thought he was going to do. He's going to go on a freaking unbelievable run toward the end of the season. The guy is
four homers on the road trip, so
just figuring himself out, making sure that he is going. Alexa is talking to me right now. Apparently, I said something that cued that. But yeah, going on an unbelievable streak, figured out these mechanics, got his timing down. Pretty much Boone is just like saying everything I've been saying for the past month, and it's all happening.
So
Boone I should be on staff basically.
Okay. Well, what is Boone saying?
His timing. Saying? No, he's just talking about the fact that he got, he's gotten his timing down. That A swing is now complete. He's finishing the move where before, you know, I think there were some mechanical issues and he got into some bad habits going to right field constantly. And not to say that that's a bad thing, because he hit a freaking laser over the right center field wall on a curveball that he just waited and waited and waited and waited, and then bat speed took over and he smacked
it. Looked like he was sitting curveball, which he never sits curveball.
Oh, see, I think that he was sitting fastball and adjusted to that ball, and that's why he was able to hit it to right field. That's kind of what I saw on that swing. But either way, the swing was beautiful. I mean, that's just one of the an unbelievable. I can't even say enough about that piece of hitting. I absolutely love that swing. But that's him, man. Like, his timing is there, and the big bodied athletes, these guys, they just take longer to get their mechanics right because they have so much more to move to get that muscle memory down and to repeat those mechanics over and over again. And that's what you have to do to be consistent on the major league level.
We really haven't seen a really hot tear from Judge since 2017, because 2018, he was good the whole time, but he never really got super hot. And then he had the wrist fracture, which messed up his entire second half of the season. And by the time he came back, it was basically time for the playoffs. So it was just about getting his timing back, like we're talking about right now. And then he did play well in the playoffs. But 2018 was just sort of like a very good, very, very, very good, very good, and then injured, and then get healthy again. And then this season, it seems to be the same as 2018, where he's just trying to get back to himself. So if we're going to start seeing a hot Aaron Judge now for the rest of the season, that's massive. That's so huge, because we haven't seen it for over a year.
And just think about how much better that makes the rest of the lineup, too, when you have a guy in there who's, you know, the most feared baseball, most feared offensive player in baseball at that point, you know, him and Trout most likely. But you're looking at the handful of guys that are on that list, and it just makes everybody around you much better. I mean, you're going to get better pitches. You're going to see Sanchez getting better pitches, and it's just a very, very good thing to see. And I think this was the first time actually since 17 that he hit three home runs in consecutive games.
Back to back to back, belly to belly to belly games.
Yeah. So getting hot, doing it in bunches.
One to each field, left, center, right.
What
he's spraying it around the diamond.
Are we need to talk about that Aaron Judge segment. I feel like we need to do it right now.
What awesome thing did Aaron Judge do?
Well, let me tell you.
Hit three home runs.
Well, no, that. And he guaranteed a home run. He went out before the game, met with bullpen catcher's dad. I forget the guy's name. Bullpen catcher's dad, who he had obviously had seen around the park in the past, has a relationship with the bullpen catcher. So went up, said hi to the older gentleman, and at the end of the conversation said, "You know what? You know what, kid? I'll get you one tonight. I'll get you one tonight.
He said, "I'll try and hit. I'll hit one for you.
Yeah, all right. First of all. No. What great thing did Aaron Judge do? He guaranteed a home run. He said, I'll get you one tonight. There was no, I'll try to get you one tonight. He said, I'll get you one tonight. Aaron Judge doesn't try to do it. He says he's going to do it. He does it.
It's like, reminds me of the Paul O'Neill Seinfeld episode where the kid asked for a home run and Paul O'Neill said, okay. And then he says, can you hit two home runs?
Mr. O'Neill?
So maybe Judge in Seattle will promise someone two home runs. If he's a man of his word, if he's about to get hot, he needs to go out there and he needs to prove that he can hit two home runs in a game. And what better way than to do it than to promise it for some kid who just loves Aaron Judge and wants to see him succeed?
You're going too far with this. He just guaranteed a home run. He did it. That's it. It's over.
So you're a sucker for the guaranteed home run or the call your shot home run?
I'm not a sucker for it. I mean, if it happens, it's amazing. Yeah, absolutely. I'm all for that. I'm definitely
here's
here
the
that.
Thing. Here's the problem I have with the clip before.
It's shocking that you have a problem with this. I just gotta say, it's shocking.
Because I bet that this happens every day. A player meets with some fan before the game and promises them a home run every single day. And 9 out of 10 times, it doesn't happen. And we don't know about it because the clip doesn't go on social media because they didn't hit a home run in the game. The only reason we know about it is because Aaron Judge hit a home run in the game, which is awesome. And the fact for that fan, he will remember that for the rest of his life. Aaron Judge talked to me before the game, promised me a home run, and then delivered. But maybe Aaron Judge promises someone a home run every single day.
No, he does not. He does not do that. He only does it when he knows he's going to hit home runs.
You know, I hate to be the voice of reason on this show, but you force me to do it sometimes.
It's really not the voice of reason. It's just, it's the wet blanket is what it is. It's the wet blanket on a beautiful moment between an older baseball guy who's been around the game forever. Cause you know, his son played ball for literally his entire life. Bullpen catcher now with the Yankees. You gotta love that. Aaron Judge goes out there, plays with being respectful to this, to the dad that he's met in the past. And you know what? He's like, you know what? I'm going to give this guy a home run. I'm gonna do that for him. And he does it.
You mentioned Judge being one of the most feared hitters when he's going right. Definitely true. Bellinger is also one of the most feared hitters in baseball. The Yankees pretty much dominated him all series. He didn't do anything. Paxton, I thought, ate up the lefty hitters in the Dodgers lineup on Friday night. Bellinger, Muncy, and Seager, I believe, only reached base once over Paxton's 6 2/3 innings. He struck out 11, only gave up 2 runs. It was the type of Paxton that we know he can be. And this is sort of the frustrating thing about James Paxton, is that we know he's capable of dominating one of the best offensive lineups in baseball. So then why do we see him go out there and struggle, look like he can't pitch through a first inning, look like he's missing his spots, giving up home runs? So sort of that is the frustration of Paxton, where he shows it, but then he can't do it consistently.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like it's to a point of like a Michael Pineda type thing where he's showed it occasionally and then you see it as rare as
he's not
as a Pineda
quite
type
that
guy.
Inconsistent. No,
he's not close to that. He's not that guy. But I mean, and as of late, you know, over the past month, Paxton's been very good. And when we're seeing, again, you look at that ERA, which is wild. When you look at his first inning ERA and then the rest of his game, it's just a very telling stat in how this guy just needs to figure it out, get over that first inning hump. When he goes 1-2-3 against one of the, you know, better lineups in baseball on Friday night, you're like, okay, here we go. All right, let's do this. And he just dominated from then on. Like, the cutter was really good. The fastball up in the zone to lefties, phenomenal. I mean, it made Bellinger look stupid. He really did. He made him look like a guy that was just not a very good batter. He set him up and laid him out. It seemed like in every at bat, he struck out what, 3 times on Friday night, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, it's just when you go out there and you dominate the best player on the team, one of the best players at baseball, and you're the guy that everybody's expecting to do that, and you back it up against one of the against the best team in baseball. I mean, that's huge. That's huge. So the way I see this right now, because that's where I am. We're right now. I'm not in the past. I'm in today land. And in today land, Paxton has really been very good over the past, what, 4 or 5 starts. He's a guy who's been putting it together, and now we're seeing good Paxton.
Who did he start before the Dodgers start? Cleveland. He pitched against Cleveland, and it was not great.
It was not great, but he didn't have his good stuff, gave up some runs, but then also gave up, I think, runs in like the 5th inning too. But just kind of battled through it, kept the Yankees in the game. And again, as David Cohn talks about all the time, like some of the best starts that they're most proud of are the ones they go out there, don't have their best stuff, but keep them in the game and battle through. And I think that's kind of what we saw on that. So,
if you're looking for just things to get excited about, it's that Paxton pitched well against one of the best teams in baseball, and then Herman went out Sunday night and pitched well against one of the best teams in baseball. Two starters who are absolutely, unequivocally going to get a start in the postseason.
Yes.
This is not like, okay, we can look at Sabathia and say, oh, he only gave up a couple runs over 4 innings. Great. Sabathia's not pitching in the playoffs. And if he pitches in the playoffs, it's not going to be in any meaningful capacity.
Unless something is occurring,
put a caveat on everything. But we're not looking to at Sabathia to carry us through playoff series.
No.
We're looking at Domingo Herman, and we're looking at James Paxton and Masahiro Tanaka, and then whatever we can get out of Severino plus an opener as the 4th starter. So the fact that Herman went out there and outdueled Clayton Kershaw also is huge. And he gave up the first home run, first batter of the game, home run, matches what DJ LeMahieu did to start the game. And it sort of like presses a reset on the game. But from there, Herman locked it down. He had Gardner get him out of a tough situation with a nice catch in center field. Otherwise, he was lights out. And that's another thing where it's like the opposite of what you in your, what should happen happens, because Herman in the bullpen outduel Clayton Kershaw. Mike Ford comes in because Didi gets hit with a pitch and has to leave the game. And lefty on lefty, Mike Ford, who's basically a journeyman minor leaguer, takes Clayton Kershaw deep.
That's an understatement. That thing was a shot.
So it's more stuff that you in your brain should say, this should not happen. It happens.
So we don't see Clayton Kershaw all that often. I mean, I can't speak for everybody. I don't know how many Dodgers games that people are watching, but I'll speak for myself. I don't want to see Clayton Kershaw pitch very often. When I do see him pitch, it's usually in the playoffs.
Yeah, usually. I was just going to say that. So I watch all of his playoff starts.
Yeah. So, but he's, you know, well documented for having struggles in the playoffs in the past. I'm just not that scared of him. I don't know. I don't know what it is to say, but I've seen him hit. I've seen him be hit. I've seen him be very good. I've seen him be very good, but I have not seen him take it to that next level and be like the guy that's scary in huge games. He just doesn't do that for me at this point. And probably I haven't seen him enough.
He's no longer the same pitcher anymore because he's living in the low 90s. He used to throw in the mid to upper 90s with his fastball.
Like James Paxton.
Yes. Okay.
I'm just saying it's a fact.
But Kershaw, I mean, he pitched seven innings and gave up three runs. I mean, if Yankees pitcher gives us that, we are over the moon excited. We are praising him. It's a standing ovation on Yankees Twitter if a starting pitcher for the Yankees goes seven innings.
I mean, I'm not saying that he's not a good pitcher. He's a very good pitcher. I'm not that dense to understand that and realize that. But what I'm telling you is he does not put the fear of God in me as some postseason pitchers have.
If it's a World Series matchup and Kershaw's going up against whoever for the Yankees, you feel confident the Yankees can sort of pull like what they used to do against Pedro. And they're not going to crush him, but at the same time, it's going to be a close game and they can win those games.
I'm feeling much better going in against Kershaw than Pedro.
Okay.
Pedro was a big game pitcher.
So Kershaw does have a kind of unfair playoff reputation.
That's fine. It's still in my head, and I'm sure it's in the batter's heads.
Because the reason people say he sucks in the playoffs is because he hasn't been as good in the playoffs as he has been in the regular season. Which in the regular season he's like Hall of Fame worthy. One of the greatest pitchers in the history of baseball, good in the regular season. And then he kind of is just good in the playoffs.
Right. Yeah. Well,
so people say, oh, in the regular season, he pitches eight innings and gives up one run. And then in the playoffs, he pitches six innings and gives up two runs. What's wrong with him?
It's not even that. It's the mentality. It's the thing that I'm just not scared. You know what I mean? Like there's some guys
and that's because of his reputation. But okay, so you would
that's
be more scared.
Thing.
Would you be more scared in a situation? Say Madison Bumgarner got traded to, I don't know, Minnesota Twins this year.
Yeah.
And Yankees and Twins are playing in the division series. Madison Bumgarner starting game one. Would you be more afraid of Madison Bumgarner?
Yes.
Even though he's not as good of a pitcher right now as Clayton Kershaw?
Yes.
So it's 100% reputation.
Absolutely. It's also what have you done? Madison Bumgarner has won the World Series and dominated.
Okay, but the Yankees also pounded him earlier this year.
That's fine. I've seen it, so I know it's there. That's what I'm saying. I've seen it. I know it's there somewhere. Might come back tonight.
quickly on Didi. So he left with that shoulder contusion after he was hit by the pitch. X-rays were negative. He is day-to-day. Another guy, day-to-day. I waited to talk about
that. But that's good news that it's negative because he had taken out of the game. It was stiffening up, like all these things, and it could be something. Like sometimes those contusions go all the way through, and you have a fracture at some point. So hopefully,
it seemed to catch mostly just meat.
It looked like it did. It looked like it hit like the meat of the shoulder.
He's probably going to be sore today. There'll be a bruise. He's not going to play on Monday. Maybe he'll sit Tuesday, but I'm not worried about this being a DL situation.
I feel like we've seen this in the past though, where they've said it's a bruise, and then all of a sudden, it's not getting better, and all of a sudden they start going to these MRIs, and they're like, oh, why is it not getting better? Because now it's the swelling has gone down, so now we can see the fracture in the bone.
So, but that's for guys like Aaron Hicks or Giancarlo Stanton. That is not for Mr. Didi.
That is
Gregorius,
true. Didi is a cyborg.
Who, on Players Weekend, painted his own cleats.
I love that.
So, I'm not worried about Didi going on the IL. But
And we're talking about the Players Weekend stuff too in a little bit. We got a lot of things. I got things to say about that.
I waited to talk about that, and I waited to talk about this ninth inning on Saturday, which was a complete cluster.
Right.
And I know we're going to spend a lot of time on. So let me first say, I think the Yankees got screwed. I think Gleyber Torres should have been allowed to score, and it should be a tie game. But that doesn't really excuse the fact that the Yankees had bases loaded with one out, Talkman and Sanchez up. And all they needed was a fly ball from Talkman, and it's a tie game. So even though the Yankees got screwed here,
and it was a bad at-bat.
Sanchez was a bad at-bat too.
Yeah, Talkman was a horrible at-bat.
They should have. So those are situations in the playoffs. You need to come through with a fly ball to tie the game.
Right.
Because there's been a lot of umpires versus the Yankees this year, and the umpires screwing the Yankees. And this was, I don't even want to say the umpires were screwing the Yankees. This is just umpires being incompetent. Because Max Muncy's out there at second base after Gardner's slide. And he even admits I was embellishing. I was pulling a soccer move. Like, it certainly hurt, but I wasn't that injured. He's writhing around on the ground in pain. Looked like he's trying to win a freaking Oscar. And then the umpires are just sitting there with their thumbs up their ass. Gleyber Torres, you see Kenley Jansen kind of put his arms up once he sees Muncy rolling over at second base. The umpires do nothing. Gleyber Torres starts home. He gets a third of the way down the baseline, and then the home plate umpire puts his hands up. It's like you cannot stop play when things are happening on the diamond just because someone's rolling around on the field. I use this analogy. Okay, a ball's hit to center field. The center fielder falls down, trips, breaks his leg. He can't get to the ball. Umpires aren't going to put their arms up and be like, hey, everyone stop. It's good Samaritan rule. No one can run from the bases because someone's in pain. Like, no. Ball's in play. You play until that ball's picked up or thrown by another guy.
It's a different scenario in the sense that I'm gonna go back and forth on this one. I don't think they got the call right. When you're in the infield, the ball is in your glove and you're on the infield and the play at that bag is done at that point. It's different because you can call time at that point. Like if he goes to the ground and immediately puts his hands up, they could grant him time immediately right then and there.
But that's not what happened.
But I'm saying you're comparing it to the outfield where that doesn't really happen. You have to get the ball in still. The ball's already in the infield.
I'm more talking about a play in process. The play isn't when the umpire called timeout, there was a play in process because Gleyber Torres was down the third baseline.
Yes, I know that. I understand that. But I'm saying that when I've seen that comparison 100 times with the outfield and the infield. It's just a different scenario because the ball's on the infield and you can call time at that point because the ball is controlled. The play is controlled at that point, especially where the ball was. The fact that Gleyber kept running was missed. They missed that. They missed and where he was.
People also don't seem to understand the fact that a player calling time does not mean there is timeout.
No, it's got to be granted.
This is not the NBA where a guy just puts the T formation in his hands and then play stops no matter what. Like, umpire has to give you timeout.
Absolutely. I mean, they have to do it in every sport as well. Just like you got to everything. You always have to be seen to call timeout. If you're not seen and you're not granted, then it's not timeout. That's it. I mean, the umpire's got to throw their hands up. Everybody knows that. You stop until they call it. You continue until they call it.
So, I just think it was another example of umpires this year doing the wrong thing on the field.
I guess you cited a Twitter stream.
Yeah, some Dodgers Twitter account, Dodgers fan Twitter account, tweeted me a rule, and it's basically
there is a place where there's discretion. Discretion. That is it, because I think the umpires can weigh on discretion, whether they called it immediately or it was because of an injured player, like. They're calling time obviously because of an injured player. That's the reason they're doing it. And if that's the case, I don't know even if that's a reviewable play, if you're able to go back and see where Gleyber is on the base path, because I'm not sure that matters or if it's reviewable. Probably not, I would think in my head. But, it's one of those plays where if you look at the video replay and you're looking at when the hands go up, he's probably but maybe a third of the way down the line, a quarter of the way down, third of the way down. But there's obvious intent to continue to go to third base or to home plate.
So the umpire didn't see him, maybe? Because I think if he saw him running home, maybe he doesn't call time. I don't know. Maybe he still does call time. Because the rule that I was tweeted basically states, and we all knew this, once an umpire calls the play dead, no players can advance. We know that.
But that, so that's the thing. Like, he could call it dead at, when the runner is going, and then say dead on the injury, runner back at third. Again, I think it's a discretion play. So the bottom line is, I don't think he was aware where Gleyber Torres was. Didn't realize that the that you know, Gleyber, I think in his brain, and again, I'm just playing advocate, devil's advocate, trying to get into like where the umpire was thinking on this as well, just to see the other side of it. But I think what he's thinking in his brain is that runner started moving when he realized that the guy was hurt. Right. So, and, yes. And because of that, he's going back to third.
Yeah. So the umpire after the game said, I called timeout because Jansen put his hands up to call for time, which did happen. But that happened the first time when Gleyber was still on third base bag. And then it wasn't until Gleyber was a third of the way down the line before the umpire granted him timeout. So he waited a good 2 to 3 seconds after looking right at Jansen and him putting his arms up.
So Jansen put put his hands up when Gleyber was on third on third.
And then he put his hands down, and then Gleyber gets a third of the way down the line.
Yeah.
Umpire puts his hands up, and then Jansen puts his hands up again after the umpire puts his hands up.
So again, I think it's one of these discretion plays. Like, so while I was watching it real time, I was really looking at the play at real time. I didn't realize how far Gleyber was down the line. And I'm seeing the play and I'm like, they're going to call a dirty slide. I'm like, I'm waiting for them to screw it up. I'm waiting for them to call something. Like, he was safe, but they're not going to call him safe. Like, how are they going to screw this up? Wasn't expecting them to screw up the other side of it. Yeah. And, but the thing is like, I did not feel as cheated as I think a lot of people did in that play, because I do think that umpires do have discretion, whether it's the correct or not. It's still part of the game at this point with human elements, whether they saw that guy or didn't. Like, that's when you should huddle and talk to the third base umpire and say, hey, where was he when time was called? Maybe the third base umpire saw the Jensen put his hands up immediately. You know, home plate, I know, controls the game. So he's the one who's, but third base could have seen something different and said he did call for it, and they could grant it to him at that point, citing the injured player.
Did you see when they first huddled before they went and put the headphones on? You could see them pointing at each other like, did you call time? I didn't call time. Did you call time? Yeah. And the home plate umpire was like, yeah, I think I called time. I think I did that. Yeah. Like, they're just confused.
Well, I mean, it's also we are looking like, I want to shit on the umpires as much as the next guy. I really do, because it's been really bad this year. This is one of those plays that is so bang bang. And again, maybe I'm wrong with the review. If you can review when a guy is, where he is on the base path compared to where the time, it just seems very arbitrary and practically impossible.
I'm not saying that should be reviewable.
No, but I'm saying I don't even think it is. But either way, at that point, now you're talking about like real time, very quick scenarios, where a guy is, what the intent of that runner is, why he's going, when did he run? Did he run because he saw the guy on the ground flopping around? Did he run? Did he stop running? Things like that. So I think the conversation was probably like, did you see him stop? Did he commit to go around? Was there a turn? Was there a hesitation to go home? Was that play fluid? Did he continue to run? No, he stopped and then ran. Like, I think all of that probably happened. And if that's the case, like, they made a decision based on what they saw in real time. And, I mean, it was a pretty much a lose-lose situation for them. Because if they call that runner in, they get crucified by the Dodgers. If they don't, they get crucified by the Yankees.
I also, in the moment during the game, I was not super upset about it because I still felt the Yankees were in a good position to tie the game and it wasn't going to matter. I thought the Yankees were going to tie that game.
Yeah.
And we're just saying, oh, that's another funky play by the umps. But you know what? It didn't come back to bite him in the ass.
Until it did.
And then the Yankees had two terrible at-bats, and it did come back to bite him in the ass. So yeah. I think I got, in hindsight, I got pissed off about it because the Yankees didn't do what I thought they were going to do. What they should have done.
And that's the other thing. Like, just take care of the business. Then we don't have to worry about talking about the umpires again. I think it was actually a tough call from the umpires, honestly. Like, if you look at that, what happened in real time with the action happening at second base.
But again, this is stuff that they need to clean up, because it's another thing in a long line of missed. Miss isn't the right word.
I don't think it was as clear of a miss as a lot of people
are saying.
It's not miss.
It's confusion. I feel like there's just confusion amongst the umpires. Sort of from, like from, how there's confusion amongst referees in the NFL. And it seems like from game to game, there's no consistency in pass interference calls. I feel like from game to game in MLB, there is no consistency in the strike zone. There's no consistency in replay. And if it's even going to be accurate after the replay shows it, it's like, why can't we just get on the same page and know that this is the these are the rules. This is the strike zone. This is what replay is going to tell us. Instead, it's a friggin' mystery box every time we go into a game. And that's the frustrating thing.
Well, I think for certain plays in baseball, and I think this is one of those definitely one of those gray area plays that's just not clear from one side or the other. When you have to consider intent, where somebody is on a split second when something is happening in real time, and then you have the play being a focus area on another place. And I understand that third base needs to be watching third base. Like, that's why you have multiple umpires. And then you come together and have a conversation. I think it's probably a lot more unclear. We're looking at that like they have no idea what they're doing. But at the same time, that conversation inside there could have been very direct and very like, hey Bob, what'd you see at third base? Did he stop? Did he have intent? Did he start moving again after the injury?
Intent thing is sort of like the intent with a check swing. Did the batter intend to swing?
Yeah.
Every batter intends to swing you start your
until
swing.
He doesn't.
You're intending to swing until you don't. Same thing with a runner. You're intending to run to the next bag until you're not. And
yeah, but I mean, you can have a clear impossible. You can have a clear pause, and then and you can tell if a guy was gonna continue to go. You can tell if a guy's motoring around third home or if he's stopping.
The question is, was Gleyber Torres going to run in a fluid motion from second base all the way home? The answer is no.
Right.
Obviously, you go station to station when the ball is in the infield. But what he did was turn to look at second base and saw Muncy doing somersaults at second base and decided, I'm going to run home.
Yes. And I think that's the misshead. They stopped it because of an injury, I think, right? Like, that's what they believed, that there was a potential injury. They stopped it, and they said because of that, that's why he went. And for that reason, you're on third. That's what I think they were.
I think Muncy is... I'm trying to put myself in a Dodger fan situation, and if Didi or Gleyber was sort of pulled that acting move and got a play called and saved the Yankees a run, how would we treat that?
Okay, so if I'm an athlete in that situation, and because they did get tangled, their feet were tangled. There's no doubt about it.
I'm not saying he flopped, but he
fell down. He admitted it.
No, he fell down. Yeah. He legitimately fell down.
Yes,
but then he
squirmed.
But see. Then why? He said, I acted a little bit. He didn't need to. He fell down. He could have flipped the ball to the shortstop immediately if he wasn't truly injured. And then the play, Gleyber's not going to run home because the shortstop standing up has the ball.
I mean, that's
like an unnecessary acting job.
I don't know. Because I think once you go to the ground right there and the runner's going, you're going to have a hard time getting him out at home plate. I think he thought in his mind that that runner was going to score. I got to sell this so that they stop it because of injury and the play is dead.
Another thing I want to talk about in this inning is Didi leading off and bunting twice against the shift. So I loved it when it was a one strike count and he just bunts it foul. And then he bunts with two strikes foul. And I'm like, that's not a high probability play anymore. So give me a full swing on two strikes, but I didn't mind it with the one strike.
It should be a high probability play. It's a sacrifice bunt.
It looked like he was trying to push bunt for a hit.
Yes.
He did not sacrifice bunt.
Right. And what that is bad mechanics, bad bunting mechanics, not doing the correct thing. He needs to lay down a bunt there. That's it. Doesn't even need to push it down the line. Like, I think he was trying to get greedy by pushing it down the line and getting extra bases. Don't even need to do it at that point. Just get it down the line. Just get the bunt down, especially with two strikes. Get the bunt down. So if you're going to do
like
it with
the
two
play
strikes,
or not.
I love the play with one. I think more guys should do it. I think every professional baseball player who's a position player should be able to bunt with two strikes and lay it down, especially if there's nobody there. Like, it's a free play. So, yeah, as a professional baseball player, he should be able to do it. You hate seeing it when it goes foul because you're like, that's dumb, now you're out. But at the same time, you're like, okay, you're a professional baseball player. You should be able to bunt and put it in fair territory but like 10 out of 10 times.
Okay, but knowing that he's not seemingly not capable of just doing an easy sack bunt down the third base line, I don't like it with two strikes. It's too risky.
I agree. If you don't have the confidence of doing it, and you couldn't do it the first time, and you're trying to do the exact same style of bunt the second time, playing pepper, not doing it well. I don't like it.
Do you think that Gardner's slide was dirty?
No. I think he got tangled. And, you know, maybe he did a little.
He pushed up a little bit.
I think he was trying to. I think he was also, his hand was there in case Muncy was going to fall on him. I think there was a little self-preservation at that point. But I didn't see any, like, egregious moves. I don't even think Dodgers fans really saw egregious moves. If you're going to.
No, the only reason they thought it was dirty is because Muncy flopped around.
If you're gonna nitpick and go in like super slow motion and look for any kind of like little tiny movement, then I'm sure you could find something that would cause you to say it was dirty if you're a Dodgers fan. But it's not real time. It's not real life. That's not what happened. It was not dirty. They did get tangled.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, how screwed did the Yankees get?
Like for this one, I'm not even like.
Is it like a six? Six and a half?
No, I'm not even there.
Less.
Honestly. Yeah, I'm at like a 5-ish.
I'm definitely at like a 6.5.
I'm also like, just get the job done too. Like, let's not talk
about
this.
That's why it's not a 9, because the Yankees should have tied that game anyway. But they definitely should. Gleyber Torres should have scored.
Yeah, but
and who knows?
It was such a flash judgment call at that moment. To me, it was just you know, because we have replay, because we can see in real time. You know, and slow it down and stop frame and do all these things. It's way more egregious to us afterwards and on social media and seeing everything. Like it just makes it that much worse. But if this play happened 10 years ago, I don't think many people would have been crying about it.
No. I mean, I kind of feel like we didn't start getting these whole dirty plays at second base until the.
Oh, no. I mean more to like the fact that the guy was called. Injured or the play was stopped, we wouldn't have seen like how far down the line he was. If you're not seeing the slow motion videos of that and like were you able to stop frame it, and I don't know, I just don't think people.
I mean, that's also upset. A reason why people are so upset about umpires recently is because the technology is there to show how much they mess up.
That's true.
Technology, I actually bet umpires are no worse than they were in 1985. It's just we didn't have this whole...
They're probably better because they're more concerned about what the technology is going to say, honestly.
But we didn't have the 50 different camera angles, the high-def camera angles, the PitchFX location on screen instantly to know, oh, bad call, good call, bad call, good call.
Yeah. No, yeah, we're all umpires sitting behind our screens at this point. So, and you could do it on your cell phone while you're waiting in line at the gas station. Like, anything can... You could do it anywhere so everybody can watch.
Right. And it was a sold-out crowd all three games at Dodger Stadium. Maybe you guys went. Maybe you guys used SeatGeek. With millions of live event tickets and a price match guarantee, SeatGeek proves there's a better way. Search sports, live music, comedy, and more. SeatGeek has the tickets you're looking for all in one place. In an industry that tends to stagnate, SeatGeek decides to stand out from the crowd. They've built the fastest way to find tickets so you can stop searching for the perfect seat and start enjoying it. If you have not downloaded their app, you definitely should. There's over 50,000 five-star reviews in the App Store, so you know they've got good customer satisfaction. They pull together millions of tickets from all over the web. Then they rate it on a scale of 1 to 10 to know how good of a deal you're getting. They put it into an interactive seat map with color codes from red to yellow to green, so you know if you're getting a good deal. I've used it 100 times. Scott has used it 100 times to go to all different things, including theater, comedy, Jets.
You're going to Jets games? I'm going to Jets games. I'm all in, baby. I'm all in. Their social media team is doing a hell of a job too with some sweet videos. I'm digging it. I'm liking the season. I'm thinking Le'Veon Bell is going to have an absolute beast of a year, and I'm definitely going to get my when I go up to the stadium, I'll go to SeatGeek and use it. It's by far the fastest and the easiest way to find tickets. I do in fact use it for my Jets tickets, and I will again this year. SeatGeek is even giving you $10 off of your SeatGeek purchase, your first SeatGeek purchase. All you need to do is use our promo code. Download the SeatGeek app today and use promo code Bronx for $10 off your first purchase. That's promo code Bronx for $10 off your first purchase.
Players Weekend jerseys, white on white, black on black. I have to admit, the black on black grew on me a little bit. By the end of the weekend, I think I liked, not liked, I was okay with the black on black. Because you could actually still see the numbers, you could see the names on the back. The white on white is just atrocious.
It's so bad. It's, Look, we talked about this. I commented on it when I first saw the designs out there. I really thought it was like a joke the first, because even the
like an Onion sports article put that out.
That's exactly what it looked like. Even the mock-ups were like a bad quality. It didn't do anything for me at all. And I've seen better versions of it. I've talked about, you know, some friends that I have that are designers and have put out better versions. You know, I'm probably more aware of this stuff or like keen to it because I pay attention to like design and sports and like all these other things. And when I see what they're doing here, first of all, I understand. Let me get this out there. I'm not the shake my fist, get off my lawn about the players' weekend and the jerseys anymore. I don't care. I don't care about the nicknames. To me, the nicknames are dumber than the actual like changing the jerseys, but whatever. I don't care about that stuff. You want to change it up? There's a lot of games in the season. Fine, do it. You want to appeal to a different audience? That's great. Like I'm for that. How about we just do it well? They have the resources. They have the people, the deals in place to get these uniforms looking sweet. They could hire any designer they want in the entire world to get these things done. Baseball is rooted in tradition, and they just go out and screw it up. I'm watching replays last night. I'm watching some MLB, just like around the league, going around, just checking out some highlights, all right, doing the SportsCenter thing. I have no idea who's playing.
No.
I'm like, legitimately, I have no idea who's playing. I need to like zoom in, stop it, pause it, look to see who the guy is, look to see what the jersey actually says. Because even in motion, you still can't see the black jerseys either very well. You see a white outline, but you can't distinguish definitively what that uniform is. So you're watching essentially the entire league playing the same uniforms with no distinction. The white ones are just an embarrassment. You can't see what the names are on the back of the jersey. I have no idea what they are. Who they are because of the nickname. So I really don't know who you are, but I can't even read the nickname to try to guess who you are.
But it was like a fluorescent weird white. And I love the fact this is so perfectly.
It was just a different material. So you had a sheen. That's what it was.
When baseball doesn't think, oh, pitchers are going to have white jerseys on and they're going to be throwing a white baseball and that might be distracting to the hitter, and they had to wear black hats because the batters couldn't see the baseball coming out of the pitcher's hands. Like, that is so typical Major League Baseball on Players Weekend to not even have that cross their mind. And then they can't even really wear the intended uniforms. They got to wear these black hats because they couldn't see the baseball.
Did they not know that ahead of time? And like, was that discussed?
It was like figured out on Friday.
I didn't know that. That's unbelievable. I mean, look around baseball. Anybody who has a white uniform, they have a dark hat on that day. Dodgers, when they're wearing their white Yankees, navy blue hat.
How often do you see pitchers getting called out for having like a really bright glove or something?
Yeah.
Because it can distract them. Or if they have like an armband on,
right,
like they get it taken off because it's distracting to the hitter when things are moving in such fast motion. Yeah, obviously it can be distracting.
It was an embarrassment. Like I don't want to be the thousandth person to dump on these uniforms, but you know what? It's the fact that they have all these resources, the fact that they've had all this time to figure this thing out. I mean, like, what are we doing? Are we copycatting the NFL with this color rush bullshit too? Like,
what happens.
It's stupid. But even the color rush on the NFL, what they do is they wear their team's color. They don't all wear the same muted monochrome color, black and white, and then just not be able to see what you're doing. It's the foresight is insanely lacking. It's terrible.
Here's what my theory is of what happened. The Major League Baseball has like a giant team that comes up with it. Everyone comes up with their own idea for Players Weekend jerseys. And then they all vote to see which one rises to the top. Everyone submitted their own design. And then when they saw white on white, black on black, like, these aren't going to win. These are trash. I'm going to vote for this one. So other people vote for my good idea, and that gets voted up the chain. And then they all voted for the joke ones, the black on black, white on white, and those ended up getting placed into actual gameplay. Otherwise, I don't know who approved this.
I mean, that didn't happen. But what I can...
I know that didn't
happen. What happened was someone out of touch made a decision. That's what happened. Someone out of touch told it's Nike who did these, right? Isn't it Nike who made the uniforms? I think whoever. Anyway, someone in that design brief said, "This is what I want. I want black and white. Figure that out, okay?" And then they did a terrible job. Because like any designer,
look to the black and white cookie.
Any respectful designer that was going to go out there and do that for any of these major brand companies that would have gone off and done their own thing would not have come up with this. There are way too many very good designers at these companies and people who are hired as freelance artists to come out and design things that would never have done this. So this came, I think, from someone who has no idea what they're talking about, from some old head in Major League Baseball who said, this is going to be a good idea, and then stuck to their guns, and it was a bad idea the whole way through. And people who were making him were cringing. That's what I think.
I'm so happy that Terry Francona is no longer managing the Red Sox because I can get behind things he says, like, what's the slogan? Let the kids play, let the grown-ups look like morons. And then he said he didn't want to go out and make pitching changes because he didn't want to be seen in public. So I just love that Terry Francona will just blatantly to the media be like, these are trash, and people look like morons.
Yeah.
I think my favorite, though, jersey from the whole weekend, I put a link in here on Twitter, was Mark Melanson just spitting in the face of the nicknames, put the phonetic spelling of his name on the back of his jersey.
Well, I think a lot of people get it wrong, too, probably. So it's annoying to him.
Is this going to be the weekend that ends it, like where we finally just say, this has jumped the shark, this is stupid, can we not do this anymore? Because the last couple of years, at least, it's been like, oh, they're kind of wearing, you know, spring training type uniforms, all-star weekend kind of like uniforms. And, you know, fine. Like, some people like that. Like, these are just
what they need awful. To do is they need to see this. Major League Baseball needs to look at what happened this weekend. Look at the, because a lot of people liked the black uniforms. I think the younger population liked the black uniforms. I have not seen anybody who liked the white uniforms, but I think there were a good amount of people that liked the black uniforms. And I will agree to the point that they looked better than the white uniforms. And there was a little bit more. But when you have a clear problem with functionality and the fact that you just can't distinguish from one player to another or one team to another, you got a problem. Like, that's bad. You have two of the most storied franchises in baseball, in sports.
Thanks for bringing that up.
The Yankees and the Dodgers. I brought this up for 2 weeks. And you do this. You have an opportunity for these two teams to play at Dodger Stadium. It doesn't happen very often. And we can celebrate it by celebrating these great uniforms. No, they screw it up. Could have even gone like throwback, cool, like modern day throwbacks. Screwed that up.
So they need
to look at this up as an opportunity and kind of like a rock bottom, essentially, for what they put out on the field and make it better and do the right thing.
See, that is like, oh, the classic Dodgers uniform versus the classic Yankees uniform. Look, the baseball had an epic fail because they scheduled it Players Weekend for Dodgers, Yankees, and it could have been such a success with those uniforms. They're just using that as an excuse. That's sort of like the excuse with steroids and kids. Like, what are the kids going to think? It's a bad example. Like, that's just something they're piling on. Like, if the Yankees were playing the A's this weekend instead of the Dodgers, they still would have been trash. So don't just say, oh, I wish I had saw the Yankees versus the Dodgers in their classic uniforms. Like, I don't really care about that.
Well, I think a lot of people do when you're putting it on. No, it has nothing to do with the fact that these are stupid uniforms, because that's the fact. Like, that's it. But what it is, it's disappointing. It's a missed opportunity is what it is. When you have two storied franchises, I'm not saying that that's like a reason why you get mad about these uniforms. The reason you get mad about the uniforms is because they were horrible. The fact that the Yankees and the Dodgers were playing was a missed opportunity for baseball is what it was.
Okay. Some injury updates. So Voit should be back this coming weekend against the A's at home. He felt good after his rehab games in Scranton. That's great news. Encarnacion is doing a light toss, soft toss, and taking grounders. Stanton plans to ramp up baseball activities on this road trip. Severino is scheduled to throw another sim game on the 28th.
On this road trip, we got like we got less than a week left. Where are we? Are we ramping it up? He's smiling in the dugout.
He's ramping up in Seattle, apparently. That's where he's going to be ramping up his baseball activities. So instead of running on the treadmill, he'll be running the bases or something, maybe.
Oh, maybe he's hitting some of the mountainous terrain.
He's going to run the mountains.
He's going to run the mountains. Yeah, we're going to see
the Great Northwest.
We're going to see clips of him running from no snow to snow caps.
It's like Rocky IV, where he's running up the side of a mountain.
He'd be going into the meat plants and smacking some meat.
B- Betances scheduled to throw his first sim game on the 27th. And then old friend Monty threw us through a minor league rehab game Sunday. The interesting thing about all these guys is that the minor league season is almost over.
Yeah. Yeah. They're going to have to – we're going to see a lot of sim games from some of these guys if they're not ready by that time. Look, Montgomery is pitching on a mound in games that matter in the minor leagues. That's a good thing. If he could show something, you never know. Like maybe he's still got a month to go. I know he threw two innings. You see him ramp up again. Four inning guy, isn't that what we're all looking at? Four innings. So you get Monty going four innings. You never know. Like I'm not saying we by any means can count on him, but it's another guy that's ramping up that has big league experience that we've all been excited for at some point. So who knows? I'm watching him out of the corner of my eye.
And Seattle to end the road trip. You got to just beat up on Seattle. They're bad. They're a last place team. Fun fact about them, Edwin Encarnacion still is second on the team in home runs.
That's big.
Behind Vogelbach, who is bizarro Luke Voit. He's having a good season, 28 bombs, 120 OPS plus. But when you go in to face a bad team like Seattle, and you got to crush them so you can at least feel good about the road trip, come back home positive on the road trip. We're going to get to mailbags. If you guys want to submit mailbags, go to bronxpinstripes.com/podcast. We had a lot of mailbags come in this week, really talking about the playoffs. What would your ideal lineup be in the playoffs? Who would you have start game one? I refrained from answering those questions now because they're so obviously going to change between now and the end of the season. We have a little over a month to go. It will change. So I get it. That's all people want to hear about. That's all people want to talk about. But what we would say just we're just reacting to what we've seen through August, and you can't make a decision on ALDS game one lineup now when there's still September to play and we don't know who's going to be healthy.
Well, that's the problem, is that you don't know who's going to be healthy. Like this lineup is going to change, and this roster is going to shape into whatever the hell it's going to be in the playoffs. Probably in the next like 3 weeks. We'll kind of know where we are. Whether guys are coming back and they look like they're going to be, healthy and get up to the baseball activities. Like, for instance, I'm looking at Stanton. Like, is he going to be into the season at that point enough where he can feel good about his at-bats? And he's at end of spring training level at-bats at that point. Like, that's kind of what you're looking for if he's going to be a serious, possibility in the playoffs. But yeah, there's just so many things that happen. I think the things that we have to look at, honestly, that are the positives is that we want to see these guys get healthy. One, just get healthy and stay healthy and continue their rehabs. And then the pitching, just continue to build and to grow into whatever this rotation pitching staff is going to look like too, because I think we're going to see some interesting stuff there too.
And that's what the first question is about. It's from Josh Lento. At LentoJT on Twitter, would any of the other playoff contenders take any of the Yankees starting pitchers? And when you look at the different American League teams, Houston, Cleveland, the Twins, the Rays, and Oakland, and you look at what they have from a starting pitching perspective, the one main difference I see on all of these teams is more depth than the Yankees. And I think that is the biggest difference, because yes, I do think teams would take Tanaka and Paxton in the playoffs, even though they've been up and down this season. They would still like to have them pitching on their team. So that's not to completely dismiss all of the Yankee starting pitchers, but it's after those guys, the Yankees have huge question marks. And you look at Houston, they have the big three, and then they have Wade Miley, Aaron Sanchez, and Brad Peacock, who are just depth pieces for them.
Yeah, you also have Pineda on this list for Minnesota, which I thought was funny. But because if Pineda's on that list, then Hap's on the list.
Pineda's actually having a far better season than J-Hap, like not even close.
But he's still bad. That's the point. Like he's not really an option. He's not one of those. I mean, if Pineda's an option, you're in big trouble.
I agree. Stats say otherwise when Pineda compared to other Yankee starting pitchers.
Stats are stupid. He's okay, horrible.
But even you look at Minnesota, they have Berrios, who we have not seen yet this year. And I think if the Yankees are to face the Twins in the playoffs, that is a big thing. The Yankees have not seen the Twins' best starting pitcher yet.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, but again, who knows if we're even going to play them. So that's a thing. Like, yeah, I know. Then we have... But even I look, I feel good. I feel confident at this point right now, looking the way the guys are going. Herman
is still pitching well. Like, still happening. Guys going out there pitching well. Paxton probably getting to his best stuff. Tanaka has been very good. I know he didn't have a great outing the last time, but has been very good over the last month. So, yeah, I feel good about it. I think that some of these guys would absolutely want our boys on the team. A quick side note before I forget, the going to Seattle, Wednesday scheduled starters, Paxton versus Justice Sheffield.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah. So that'll be interesting. Circle that
Sheffield's, one. Sheffield's been struggling this year. He got sent back down to Double A at some point.
Yeah. I think he's got this may be his second or third start in the bigs, but if he pitches well
against the Yankees, get ready for a Twitter meltdown. I kind of hope he pitches well against the Yankees and the Yankees still win the game, but just so I could see Twitter meltdown. I love, it's like that line from Batman. Some men just like to watch the world burn. Sometimes I just like to watch Twitter burn.
Occasionally it's fun, but I'd prefer it not to as well.
Again, though, I come back to the Yankees have Tanaka, Pax, and Herman, and then a Severino question mark and an opener. That is their playoff rotation, which the depth thing is a concern, I think, going into the playoffs.
Again, we could talk about this for till the cows come home, but it doesn't change anything. They can't, unless Brian Cashman is going to go find some random AAA guy with a minor league contract, and then he turns into Aaron Small for the last 4 weeks and then becomes a major factor in our playoff rotation. Nothing's changing.
Okay, so sitting here August 26th, who do you feel best about in the starting rotation at this very moment?
Got to be Herman. I mean, Herman has put together a complete season. I think we've seen some struggles, but when I see him go on the road at Dodger Stadium on Sunday Night Baseball against Clayton Kershaw and pitch the way he did, how can you not feel good about him?
So if you're any of those other playoff teams, you're picking Herman off the Yankees to add to your starting rotation?
Yeah, I'd say, I think they would take Tanaka and Paxton the way Paxton's been throwing.
So they'd take all three?
I think that they're all options, yes. Probably not for Houston, but
Houston, yeah, that's the thing, though. Like, Houston would not start any of those three.
Oakland absolutely would. Tampa would. Minnesota would.
Yes, I agree.
Cleveland probably would over Plesac.
Plesac, yes, but not Bieber and Clevinger.
No, Plesac probably.
And then if Kluber comes back and he's healthy, and Carrasco, I know, is such a huge question mark because of the leukemia, but he has been throwing bullpens, so he might be sort of one of these, like we talk about, just get me to four innings. Carrasco might be a four inning guy for them in the playoffs.
Yeah, I don't know how
they
many
did lose. They lost Jose Ramirez this weekend.
They did. And I don't know how many
Hammett bone.
The reason the Yankees can do this four inning thing is because of the bullpen. So I don't know how many other teams can get by.
Cleveland's bullpen solid.
It's not as deep as the Yankees.
Yeah,
the Yankees have a deep bullpen at this point, and they can get by, with less starting pitching. So.
Tim, Brian Cashman has been quoted as saying by not signing Patrick Corbin, they had the money to sign players like LeMahieu and Ottavino, ignoring that they could have paid all of them if they didn't care about the luxury tax. Which do you think is better, Corbin and no DJ and Ottavino, or DJ and Otto but no Corbin? So quickly, I just war just to have like a summation total. LeMahieu's got 4.4 war, Ottavino 1.4. That's 5.8 total versus Corbin's 4.0. War.
I mean, I don't necessarily believe Cashman in the sense that it was one or the other, but
no, that's just kind of a cop out.
It's Cashman talk, is what it is. It's just saying something to like try to glaze over what it was. The fact is, they weren't going to pay Corbin what he asked for. I kind of don't blame them. Like, yeah, he's making,
but like you mentioned last week on the podcast, he's been worth that contract so far.
Yes, I mean, he's playing that. He's that guy. There's no doubt. He's been that guy. And he's pitching very well. So yeah, I mean, hindsight, you're looking at what he's doing, the money, you're like, oh, okay, maybe it was worth it. But at the time, I think a lot of people were like, that's a shit ton of money to pay that guy who has really not that long of a track record.
And what I think Tim is missing as far as luxury tax goes, the real thing is they could have signed Otto and LeMahieu, not signed Hap, and used Hap money to sign Corbin, and then you could finagle the luxury tax so you could still be under it. You'd still have to commit the long-term dollars to Corbin, but as far as season-to-season luxury tax goes, they could have made it work.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. If you're going to if I'm playing Monday morning quarterback with this whole offseason plan and looking at what happened and what didn't happen, you circle Jay Happ because he's been abysmal, and you circle Corbin and you say this guy's been very good, and you pay him the extra money. It's easy. Right. It's really simple.
But given the choice, make the hard decision. Corbin, but no LeMahieu and Otto, come on. Or vice versa.
Come on.
I know. It's come not. On. It's unfair because LeMahieu's having an MVP caliber season, and Ottavino's been a weapon out of the bullpen. But it's sort of like
I would let Patrick Corbin punch me in the face to keep LeMahieu on this team. I love him. He is becoming my favorite player in baseball.
Absolutely. And I agree with you. I give me Ottavino and LeMahieu at this very point. But let's say we might have a different opinion come playoff time. If the Yankees starting rotation goes out there and shits the bed, we might say, oh, they could have used Patrick Corbin over LeMahieu and Ottavino. So it's like all depends on what you just saw. It's sort of the frustrating thing about doing a podcast twice a week during the season. It's that the season is so long, but whatever just happened in the series you just watched or whatever just happened in the month of games you just watched, it's sort of like what the narrative is. And you have to try and remember, I try and, to the best of my ability, look at the entire thing and say, okay, how is this in context? Because LeMahieu has been the Yankees' most valuable player this year. Ottavino has been solid, rock solid out of the bullpen all year. You going to give that up just because Patrick Corbin's been one of the 20 best starting pitchers in baseball? I don't know.
So. No, you're not. You're not going to give that up. If anybody says anything against DJ LeMahieu, we got problems.
Drew Pintus, what do you think about trading Andujar in the offseason? He will obviously have great trade value. Having DJ and Gio allows for this, I believe. This is also assuming we re-sign Didi. Even if Gio turns out to be a fluke of some sort, we have guys like Tario or even the dreadful Tyler Wade if we need them. Ultimately, Gio will be the utility guy, so even if he turns into a 230 hitter, it's not the worst thing. Voit, Gleyber, Didi, DJ plus Gio as the utility for the infield sounds good. All right. Shaking your head.
Yeah, well, I mean, I understand like the reasoning behind the question, like the sentiment of the question, I think is a good question to ask, but I think a lot of Drew's reasons in here I don't agree with. First of all, I don't think he has great trade value. I think he's probably doesn't have trade value. The fact that they have DJ and Gio actually hurts his trade value. The fact that he was injured hurts his trade value. Yep. So no, his highest trade value was now very clear after his rookie year and you know should have been the rookie of the year. That was his peak. But you couldn't trade him at that point.
I don't even know was that his peak because the Yankees did not want to give him up for Gerrit Cole prior to 2017. So before his rookie season, he was the centerpiece in the Gerrit Cole trade that the Yankees said no to. So maybe that was his peak trade value. Maybe. They could have gotten Gerrit Cole for him.
Okay. Well, if you're comparing, possibly. It's almost like, you know, he's still that prospect status and people love that. Whereas you have a guy that's done it in the major leagues. See, I think that if you see a guy that's done it in the major leagues, your value is higher. I just don't think it was talked about as much at that point. I think he still would have.
Well, I think defense also.
And Gerrit Cole wasn't the Houston value. And Gerrit Cole year he had under Houston. So it's also hindsight looking at that. He looks like a better value now.
But if you're a team looking to trade for Miguel Andujar, don't you think you're a National League team a little afraid to trade for him?
Oh, because of the defense. Yeah, possibly. Yeah, I see that. Okay. Either way, arguably highest trade value. Either way, it's gone. That is gone. Now he's a bad defender who's coming off an injury on a team that has third baseman, you know, a depth guy.
And with a third baseman who's outproducing him in every way.
Yeah.
Andujar, Fangraph WAR last year, 2.7, 128 WRC+. Urshela, so far this year, 3 WAR, 145 WRC+.
Yeah.
He's demolishing his stats.
And the narrative of this, the defensive metrics, too, with him being like I can't get there. After seeing some of the plays that he made this weekend, too, just make unbelievable plays look routine.
No, but Urshela's defensive metrics are far and away better than Andujar's.
Oh, yeah. I'm not comparing.
They're closer to league average, which is not what your eyes tell you. And Duhar's, you look at him with your eyes and you say, that's a bad third baseman. And then you look at his advanced metric and you say, yeah, that's a bad third baseman.
So they tell you what you already know. Good to know that. The nice thing about when you see, so I do think that they're probably going to look at him. I also think they're going to look at Now you have to look at Andujar at other positions. To me, you have to look at him as a potential left fielder. You have to look at him as a potential first baseman and see what you can do there. If there's more that you can squeeze out of him, whether he's on your team or as a trade piece, to show that he can do these things. Because right now on this team, moving forward, you go look at 2020, like, he's not the third baseman. He's not. He got Wally pipped. Like, absolutely, that happened. And Andujar is in a tough spot, I think. For the bat's still there. We know that. But the defense isn't there, and now there's a guy that can play defense better and shows that he can play offense. So the other thing is that I don't think Gio's a utility guy either. He's a third baseman.
I also would like to know what Andujar would have done offensively this year. With clearly offense is up this year.
Yeah.
So to compare Urshela's WRC plus 145 to Andujar's 128 last year, and you say, oh wow, Urshela is having a way better season than Andujar. Well, how do we factor in the increased juice ball and like all these home runs being up and just overall offense being up? So if you give Andujar that bump, maybe he's having a similar season to Urshela.
You know, it's totally fair. We don't know. With the
whose bat do you have more? Assuming both fully healthy.
Oh, I want Andujar.
2020, you have more confidence in Andujar's bat than Urshela's bat? I do too.
Well, yeah, because, you know, I mean, Miguel Andujar has been an offensive player his whole career. Like, coming up, we knew that the offense was his you know, calling card. Urshela, no. Like, so it's more of a, if we're looking at confidence going into another year, like, I still think Andujar is going to produce at a high level. I have no reason to say that Urshela is not. But, you know, I think when you're talking about talent-wise, as far as, like, the offensive skills, like, I'd rather have Andujar probably.
And you, I would say definitely that rather he have got Wally Pipp, so he's not going to be the third baseman next year. Do you think there's even going to be a competition in spring training?
I think they'll probably talk about it. But again, I think that they need to look at, if they're going to maximize value of Andujar, and honestly, for Andujar's personal sake of being a long-term piece on the Yankees or somewhere else, at this point, I think he does have to look at other positions.
Yeah, and unfortunately, he's not a capable enough defender where you can say, oh, he's going to play a little first base and a little third base for us next year. He's just not, he's not capable of doing that. He needs to just be at a position and be at that position.
Or he's a DH. And not many teams want to pay like a young DH like that. Like, you usually kind of age your way into a DH spot, not start off in a DH spot.
And he doesn't give the Yankees good value at DH because you've got Stanton who needs DH time. You got Judge who's going to need DH time.
But I'm saying somewhere else. I'm looking at everything else for him, because if we're looking at trade value, then American League DH is certainly a possibility if you have the flexibility.
All right, so we've got one final thing. It's not really a question, it's just a thought from Lee Jones. He submits mailbags all the time from Liverpool, England. He says, not a question, but feel free to use it. I've loved the chats about robo-umps and Scott's mentions of Hawkeye in tennis. An even better comparison is goal line technology, also pioneered by Hawkeye, which has been in football, soccer, for about 4 years. Seriously, Google this stuff. You'll be well impressed. It came about due to the number of instances where it wasn't clear if the ball had completely gone over the line prior to a goal line clearance by a defender. These were routinely called incorrectly and were obviously very costly. Ever since Hawkeye has been brought, there's been zero incorrect calls, and we're talking accurate to within millimeters. The referee wears a watch that vibrates if the ball has crossed the line, so there's no delays in play and no arguing by the players as they trust the technology. This would be perfect for Major League Baseball if it weren't, and it wouldn't even affect the umpires' jobs, as they could still be there to call balls and strikes. They'd just be wearing some sort of vibrating watch or something to indicate
some
ball
indicator,
or
yeah.
Strike. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it's, well, I think to call balls and strikes, that would be tough. That'd be like too instant. I don't know how that would work. But no, Lee's he's talked about this Hawkeye stuff of sent in mailbags. And yeah, the Hawkeye technology, it's been around in tennis for a while. So that's kind of where I've seen it. I don't really watch soccer very much. So I didn't know about the implementation until Lee put it there, but it makes a lot of sense. I mean, either way, the technology can make all of the decisions for you, and it is there. It is accurate. It is there. And you have the trust of the fans, the trust of the sport, the trust of the players that this technology is correct. To, like he said, down to the millimeter. Like, you're going down to specific laser point. That we've gone, we're not at the glowing puck days anymore. You know, like, we can identify where balls are on a field you know, down to the smallest speck. So I think it's the fact that they're going to this next year, I'm really interested to see how that's going to work. Not only for the on-play, but I know the fact that they're using this Hawkeye to really boost the advanced technology too, the metrics. Like all the nerds are like, you know, they're doing their A-Rod laugh because they're giddy, so excited and giddy to the amount of numbers that they're going to have additional to what they already have. Like the amount of acronyms that we can come up with now that I think that Hawkeye comes in. Like we could use Hawkeye technology to calculate BWIPs, no problem, no problem.
Well, it also, I think he mentioned the players trust the technology, I think would be important for both pitchers and batters to trust the technology. Yeah. And I think it would change the game significantly.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And cause you already have it. We've seen it done in other sports and we've seen it done well. And it's instant. Like you said, the watches that the refs are wearing in soccer, that's cool. Like it vibrates if it goes over like that. It definitively tells you yes or no. With tennis, the chair umpire can make a call immediately because what they do is they go to the Hawkeye and you see the zooming in of the ball. The whole crowd kind of like plays with it now too. It's like you hear the hum of like the ball zooming into the line and then you get like the immediacy of the call, yes or no. And that's it. That's it. There's no random dude in a closet in New York, in Chelsea. I don't have to hear about that anymore. Like that's it. We're seeing it. And I think being visible to the eye is a huge part of having the dependency and the confidence of the players and the fans. You got to see it with your own eyes to have that confidence.
Absolutely. And I think we're trending that way. Not 2020, not 2021, maybe something after the next CBA.
I think 2020, we're going to see some stuff.
Well, CBA is up in 2021. Yeah, that's but renegotiated.
But the so Hawkeye technology is coming
some
in
stuff then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're going to see,
I think it will improve the game. It's going to make for some less frustrating umpire calls, which is good. That's going to do it for mailbags. Again, bronxpinstripes.com/podcast to submit mailbags. I want to also reiterate, we partnered the Cameron Maben stuff. So
yeah,
we mentioned it last week, Maben's mission to support Wear Dream in Harlem. There's the Hug Season shirts on the website. Go to the fan shop in Bronx Pinstripes. You can support Cameron Maben's foundation. 100% of the proceeds for the t-shirts are going to the foundation. He tweeted out some pictures of him wearing the shirts in the dugout. He was on CC's podcast. So really cool thing to see a Yankees player, a fan favorite Yankees player so far this year, wearing one of the Bronx Pinstripes t-shirts for a good cause. Go check it out. Any last words, Scott?
Yeah, you're gonna see a lot more of that tee this upcoming week as well, and into the homestand. So I'm excited for that. And we're also going to be adding some children's sizes, some women's cuts for it as well. So there's going to be more of a collection on the site for that. I know this has also gone out there real quick. There have been a bunch of people that make t-shirts and things that have been affected by this too. But guys, if you're buying shirts from whoever it is, but if it's one of ours, just make sure you're buying it from the site, because if you're not, you're probably getting it from some weird app that's stealing everybody's designs. It's happening all over the place. The print quality is not going to be there because they don't have the original design. What they're doing is they're stealing it from the web, which makes it pixelated and shitty, and the design is not going to print well. It's just going to be bad. Don't buy it from them. There are a bunch of scam artists out there. It's irritating to people who spend the time to design it. You're not supporting whoever does that. So don't do it. Please don't go on these like T-Chip and all these other bullshit sites that are stealing designs from everybody. It's not just us. It's everybody. Buy it from the people who actually who made them and sell them out. Especially like people are stealing a charity shirt and putting it up on websites and trying to get people to buy it. Like, don't do that.
I mean, the internet, that's when you just like, sometimes I just look at the internet and I say, nah, what an annoying entity.
Yeah.
But go algorithms versus algorithms, just stealing shit.
Go check it out. It's a lot of really good, cool things that are happening with the fan shop. We have a ton of stuff on there. And then partnering with Maven has been a lot of fun. Also, one thing, so we got a few voicemails in this week. Honestly, there weren't enough good voicemails for us to play. When I say good, I mean like quality good, or just, you know, like, I don't care what you say on there. I don't care if you swear. I don't care. Just make it like somewhat like that listenable. That's all I'm asking. Like, that's all we're asking. But we've had in the past some really good calls. you guys got to step it up. Like, that's the bottom line. We've had some really good mailbags, but the only way the voicemail segment works is if we see people calling in about passionate things that they want to know about, that they want to get off their chest, and put some good stuff onto the voicemail line. I love it. I love hearing from you guys. I love putting that together and hearing all the passion from everybody else. But you got to bring it. We can't do these half-assed voicemails and then us playing, because we can't play like the half-assed stuff. It's just not enough. So we're gonna save a couple of the ones from this week and hopefully play them next week. But we gotta show up. Like, we need all of you guys to show up. 646-480-0342. 15 seconds, 30 seconds. Give us your best 30 seconds about what happened over the weekend, what's happening on the diet. There's a lot of things happening, and I know people are passionate about it. So call into that voicemail line. Again, 646-480-0342. Give it a call. Get your voice on the show and be heard. Let's do it.
Way to go, everyone. You made Scott mad. All right, we'll talk to you Thursday.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.